Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time to review the defense from that loss to the Bengals on Thanksgiving night. Joining me to do that is Matt Roff. Matt, how you doing?
Doing good, Ken. Saw that the Blue Jays got Dylan Cease for 7 years, $210 million. Just time stamping us a little bit. But would have liked to see the Ravens play a little bit better in that game yesterday. Wouldn't quite call it a Thanksgiving massacre, but five turnovers is not going to win you many ball games, if any at all.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't good. And I don't think the Ravens had a lot of forced errors in this game, honestly. I think it was a lot of unforced errors, you know, coming forward with the hand, and still thought that was probably an incomplete pass. And don't they have a tuck rule and whatnot that tells you that's an incomplete pass? Thought that the fumble at the goal line was awful and largely unforced, that likely could have just, you know, maintained possession and gotten down to the 1 yard line or thereabouts. At the worst, obviously the fumble near the goal line with Lamar, probably the closest thing they had to a forced turnover. Absolutely terrible. Oh, they had the tipped ball interception as well too, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, and that's where Likely was coming across the formation to block, and the ball got tipped. That was not fun.
Yeah, bad situation indeed. So the horribly inconsistent play obviously caused the Ravens a loss in this one. They had some, you know, move the ball fairly effectively on offense when they weren't turning it over, which is not saying a lot, by the way, but they did, you know, they out gained the Bengals on a per play basis. And then they were out snapped in the game 80-57.
Yeah, that's not going to win you many ball games either. I think that this has been like the bizarro Ravens season. If you're a Seinfeld fan, where we have been so accustomed to, in the recent years, the Ravens winning that snap count and also the time of possession. But, you know, it's that snap count is super important. It's not just time of possession. It's those snaps that really matter. And this year we're seeing a complete reversal of it, where the team, especially on offense, is unbelievably explosive, but then a lot of times lacks the ability to just sustain the longer drives. And then the defense just lacks the ability to get off the field as they get more tired, and especially in the games where they've had a hard time forcing a turnover like this one, it just leads to you having that lopsided snap battle. And, you know, this is a team where there's a lot of injuries on the defense, and you know, really didn't want to see Kyle Hamilton playing 80 snaps. I can tell you that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I didn't either. And he was in there for every snap, and then three more penalties that were beyond this. But the Ravens now, and this is surreal, but they've only had 60 snaps or more in 3 of 12 games. That is just absurd. And, you know, the Ravens are a team, they're going to have a 1,300-yard rusher probably, or 1,200-yard rusher probably, in Derrick Henry. It's not like they don't have a run game. Lamar Jackson has been unhealthy, and that has hurt the run game some, but that's a team that should have a lot of snaps. And combination of some defensive effectiveness early on and some offensive ineffectiveness now has really led them into a dark place.
Yeah, the season's really flip-flopped on each other, right? They started off, they were scoring points out the yin-yang against the Bills and putting up 41. Then, you know, even through the first four or so games, then the injuries hit Lamar. And then now, you know, the defense, I thought they did a pretty good job in the first half of holding on. Offense didn't always put them in a good position. But, you know, you went into halftime getting the ball at half and you were only down, what was it, 12-7, right? That's mm-hmm. That's not terrible. You can come back from that, make some adjustments at halftime and come out and let a rip. But they just continued to turn the ball over. And then, you know, the injury to Wiggins, which was funny because you mentioned earlier this week that Wiggins was one of the players where you really don't want to see them get injured, right? Wiggins gets injured, and I think that had a really negative impact on the defense as a whole. But, you know, they just, those snaps really start to add up, and 80 snaps on the defense is just not what you want to see. I was on another point, I was kind of surprised to see Burrow out there. Were you surprised to see Burrow out there? I think the guy's a competitor. I know he wants to go, but I thought a lot of the Burrow chatter was just blowing smoke. And, you know, he looked pretty good for a guy who had just come off a toe surgery to me.
Yeah, he certainly didn't play poorly. I wouldn't be kissing his ass over what he accomplished in this game, frankly. He mm-hmm. had, you know, the Ravens held him pretty effectively. He was way below his, not way below, but he's, you know, 33 sure. yards below his expectation, which we'll get to a little lower later. the ball was out quickly, consistently. That was what was effective about him. And most importantly, he held onto the football. Their only turnover was on a fumble late in the game. Nice play by Travis Jones to keep the Ravens in it, by the way. Another case where the defense, you know, kind of reversed the fortunes of the offense yet one more time. It just wasn't enough, and they weren't able to make anything out of that. I wanted to kind of talk about one specific, incredibly streaky first quarter they played. Now, this is funny because oftentimes it's been a case that the Ravens come out versus the Bengals and they get beat the first couple of drives. The Bengals, for whatever reason, seem to do pretty well in terms of scripted plays against the Ravens and move the football effectively and score. This game, they came out and they won, and I'm using the Football Outsiders definition for this, the first seven offensive plays. And they weren't big wins. They pass left for 8, pass right for 3, run right for 7, pass right for 14, a defensive hold on Okoye, a pass middle for 9, and a run middle for 2, which doesn't seem like a win, but it was 2nd and 1 at the time, so it was a defensive win by definition. And then that got them all the way down to the 16-yard line. It's kind of like that Rams game from 23 where then all of a sudden they decided not to run anymore as soon as they'd run all the way down the field and gotten the ball into the red zone. Well, they didn't change what they did, but the Ravens then turned it around and won the next 13 snaps defensively all the way through the end of the quarter. And just an amazing turnaround. I've never seen like two streaks like that dominate a single quarter. Occasionally you'll see a team that does exceptionally well and they have, you know, 12 out of 13, 12 out of 14 kind of wins. And they're destroying the other team. They're getting turnovers and whatever. But at some point, somebody gets a 6-yard gain on first down and that does it, or a 5-yard gain even, or somebody converts a first down under anyway, or there's a penalty. A lot of things can get
yeah, drop a pass.
Yeah. Any of those things to change the fortunes of the nature of things. But this was amazing. I mean, this was the next 13 plays are down to the 16-yard line. Incomplete pass, 3-yard run, incomplete pass. Then the next drive started off with that sack minus 7 by Humphrey. Mm-hmm. Then incomplete pass and a pass for 9 on 3rd and 17. Still a defensive win. Mm-hmm. Got him off the field. Lamar fumbles to get the ball to the 2-yard line. Incomplete pass, run for 0. Incomplete pass. They're off the field and they get the ball back. Bengals get the ball back after a punt near midfield. Run left for 1. Run right for 3. False start on the right guard. And that's the end of the quarter. Brings up 3rd and 11. And all of a sudden, it's like the clock struck midnight or something because they got a 13-yard conversion on that play, drove down for a field goal after it. But incredible first quarter for the defense, really, that they put together. I mean, first of all, holding the Bengals to 3 points is good, period. But the fact that they came back from that kind of deficit when they're at the 16-yard line and they won all those plays in a row, including the stop from the 2-yard line on 4 downs, is truly remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, I give Zach Orr a lot of credit. I mean, I think that people have been pretty hard on Zach Orr. I think it's been fair, the criticism in a lot of aspects. Maybe some it hasn't been, but I like to see that kind of adjustment. I mean, those first 7 plays, it was Swiss cheese central. You know, I mean, the defense was just, like you said, it wasn't 50-yard pass play after 50-yard pass play, but it was the wins, right? It was 6, 7, 8 yards. It was converting even, you know, for 2 yards, but still converting and getting the next fresh set of downs. So I really like that adjustment. And I think that the, you know, the turnovers that happened right around that time where they just couldn't, you know, that you would hope you get 13 straight defensive wins, that you would be up, you know, 10-3. Right? 13-3 or something like that, where you take advantage of what the defense is giving you. You get the defense off the field and let them rest so that they can continue to execute at a high level. And you know, the game turnovers really enabled it, but just really got away from them. And the defense certainly wore down towards the end of that game there.
Yeah.
Very disappointing to see. I think another thing to bring up while we're just going through the, you know, kind of the overall topics here is, the Bengals didn't have Shamar Stewart playing. He was hurt. Trey Hendrickson was hurt. And T. Higgins was hurt. And Cam Taylor-Britt, who's been playing pretty well this year, was hurt. So, and then you have Burrow coming off the toe injury. And so one of the things I was thinking about when it comes to this game is we had Lamar a little hobbled. They had Burrow a little hobbled. They were missing a couple people. We're missing Matt Ebike, right? Maybe we had a few players that we wish could have suited up, maybe like Justice Hill or Taven Bryan, right? But nonetheless, Trey Hendrickson, Cam Taylor, Britt, Shamar Stewart, Higgins, these are pretty big names. And it makes me a little concerned about going to play the Bengals in their house where they don't have to travel here on a short week. And, you know, I was saying this to you over Twitter, Ken. My thought was that the Ravens were going to go 3-3 to end the year. A win against the Bengals, a loss, a win against the Steelers and a loss, and then splitting that Green Bay, New England set of games. It's tough when you lose the first one of that. And, you know, I think the Bengals are going to be healthier the next time we see them. So just disappointed that we dropped this game on our home turf on Thanksgiving, because I think winning this game with the Steelers having to play the Bills this weekend would have set them up nicely. Now, what I saw was that the Bills might be without their left tackle, Breshad Breeland, their top corner, and another player or two.
Bernard, linebacker. Yeah.
Yes. It's very hard to beat the Steelers when you're missing your tackles. That definitely goes against the Ravens' favor, but I still think the Ravens have the season in their hand. They just have to take care of business, and they're running out of hiccups to this has really got to be one of the last hiccups that they have here. And the games against Pittsburgh loom very, very large now.
Yeah, they do. The Ravens are certainly rooting for Buffalo to beat Pittsburgh no matter what on Sunday. I can't foresee any circumstance where you wouldn't root for that, although there are some good reasons why having Buffalo lose would also be a good thing. But if Buffalo beats Pittsburgh, then the Ravens will have the division in their own destiny within the division in their own hands, regardless of the outcome against the Steelers. So if they lose the game to the Steelers, as long as Buffalo loses to Pittsburgh, the Ravens win out, they win the North. Mm-hmm. They might be only tied for the division tiebreaker, which is the worst they can be, but then they could have if they beat the Bengals, the Steelers, the Packers and the Patriots, which is a tall order.
Sure.
But if they were to win those four, they'd win it by the third tiebreaker at the worst, which is common opponents. And they could of course still outright the Steelers, even if they went 9-8.
Yeah, I think that if there's any hope, which my hope is dwindling, but I still think there's some. But if there's any hope, it's that I was hoping that they could clinch the division by the last week, give some of the players that they have that really need some rest, like Roquan, Travis Jones, Kyle Hamilton, Marlon Humphrey, Lamar, maybe Henry. Get those guys off their feet for a week before the playoffs. It's been a long time since they had their bye, and hopefully get a team that's a little bit more fresh coming into the playoffs with Lamar getting healthier. That was my hope. Again, losing this game to the Bengals definitely put a little bit of a damper on that hope, because I think that the Ravens are still a talented team. I mean, they've lost some players, you know, in Madubuike, Tavius Robinson, you know, et cetera. But I still thought that they had enough of a team to really make a run at it. But I do think that they could use at least some of their stars could use a week off their feet as the injuries are starting to mount going forward.
I agree with you. I had a slightly different hope, and that was that the Ravens would still be able to rally and get the 3 seed in the AFC, because I think both the Patriots and the Colts, to a certain degree, have been kind of exposed as not probably as good. The Patriots, because of their lousy schedule they played cupcake of a schedule.
Yep.
I just messaged you, take a quick look if you would. And then the other is that if they got the 3 seed, they'd be in really good position potentially to get the AFC championship game at home. And the way that would potentially happen is Denver could get beaten by Buffalo, say, or by the Chiefs if they'd happen to make it, which is still possible. And then the number 2 seed, which could be the Patriots, gets beat by the other one of those teams, or even the Chargers or somebody like that who gets it, or the Texans. And then the Ravens, if it's 7-2 in the first week, would play home the second week. And could be a rare year where they'd play 3 home playoff games as the 3 seed. You can do that as a 2 seed. You can do it as a 3 seed, but it's much harder to do as the 4 seed. It's also possible there, but you have to have a couple things. Is six and seven both need to wins for that to happen. But I was hopeful that they could go into week 18. I think the chance of that happening is now pretty slim that they're going to go into week 18 with the division wrapped up. It would be a fantastic if they did. The gamblers still have them as a slight favorite to win the division, about 60% to 32.5% for the Steelers, and slightly higher for now for the Bengals than it was, obviously. But still pretty good chance of winning the division still, but now is the time, because they just lost the one game of those six that they had left that they probably had the highest chance to win. And they still enter the Steelers game with a six and a half point favorites, but they absolutely have to have that one. They're not going to have a better chance to win any game the remainder of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you said earlier, it just stinks that there were a lot of unforced errors on their hands. You know, if you're Isaiah Likely, you know, he's jumping over people, swinging the ball around like a loaf of bread, you know, you kind of like the Zay fumble in that Kansas City playoff game. You know, when you're at the goal line, you have got to hold that ball. There is nothing that can happen positively from you dropping that ball at the goal line. There's three people trying to tackle you. You're the only one there. You're going to get knocked down to the ground. You're not going to be able to pick up a ball. And I know John and the coaches teach that, right? So it's just,
right.
There's got to be a little bit more focus on the ball security. I mean, Zay Flowers with that fumble towards the end of the game, you know, I mean, just there are just so many of those examples where, I mean, like, for example, the Lamar Tuck rule, that happens, right? You think you're going to make a pass, then you try to hold up because you see the middle linebacker coming over. That's going to happen. But, you know, wrapping up when you're about to get hit, you've got to do that. And we're running out of daylight here to really make that happen.
Right. All right, let's move on to some other things. A couple of strange activations. You know, I always look for that an hour and a half before game time. And we saw Carl Lawson active for the first time over David Ajabo. No injury designation for Ajabo all week. So I presume he's healthy as he has been and playing regularly in recent weeks. But Lawson, he's been with the team for 5 weeks now, has never been activated. And now he finally gets a chance versus the Bengals and plays 26 snaps.
What did you think of those 26 snaps, Ken? I was watching the game. There was lots of family over, kids running around. I'm trying my hardest to listen to the game. I'd be a little antisocial, but I didn't get a chance to rewatch and focus on Lawson specifically. Did you think he added some juice to the pass rush? I know he's not much of an edge setter, run defender, but did you like what you saw? Would you like to see him activated again, or was that enough for you?
I was underwhelmed with what he brought as a pass rusher. This one thing he still does pretty well, even at his age, is he gets off the ball very quickly. And so you, I think you notice that if you watch 5 or 6 plays of his, that he's very, very fast off the snap. But he had one tackle, I believe it was to a contribution for a defensive win, but that's not much for 26 snaps. And I think he kind of represents or is very, typical of the problem across the Ravens outside linebackers that he's a situational pass rusher, which pretty much defines all four of them. Now, Van Noy is maybe a little bit more than that, but he's being used in a situational role. And Draymond Jones, that's pretty much what he is. And who am I forgetting here?
Green.
Yeah, and Green, that's what he should be as a rookie. Sure. And he might be more than that at some point in the future, but he's been giving this trial by fire where he's playing a ton of run snaps, and I think that's hurting him. And so they don't really have any early down OLBs anymore. And, it's not obvious what they're trying to accomplish in terms of a Lawson activation within that framework.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Ajabo played some of the most underwhelming set of snaps over the last 4 or 5 weeks that I can remember in recent memory. Voss made a joke on Friday Morning GM last week that, you know, he saw him make one play that was at least looked positive. And you know, that was about all he could pull out. I think that they would like to see what they have in Lawson. I don't know if one game is enough to fully assess that. It could be, but I would like to see Lawson get another game to see what he can do, to get some film on his current body at his current age, what he needs to do better. Like you said, I did notice him. He fires off the ball, but there wasn't much after it, right? So there was just kind of like he was shot out of a cannon. I'd like to see if he can maybe build off of that and work something to it. You know, like you said, 26 snaps, there really wasn't much that came out of it. But, you know, Ajabo's played as many snaps a few of the weeks recently, and I don't think he's really proven all that much more either. Now, they have been playing Ajabo on some rundown snaps, which is interesting because I've never really thought Ajabo was much of a run defender, even going back to his time at Michigan. But I think that the outside linebacker edge rusher room is definitely a little flawed, and losing Tavius Robinson just really, really hurt because he was that person to eat up those snaps on the rundowns on early downs for sure.
Yeah. So one thing, whenever you hear that about a young outside linebacker that's just been drafted, you say, well, the floor is his outstanding run defense. Look at that with a jaundiced eye is all I can say, because it's usually crap. It's first of all, it's a lot harder to play run defense in the NFL versus NFL offensive tackles and even NFL tight ends than it is in the college game. So where you have big advantages and even, you rely on your athleticism to win and hold the edge and whatnot. That's an enormous difference. And, we've heard it so many times now in the case of him and Owe in particular, that have been two guys they've used it on a lot. Owe was completely converted, even with additional size this year, to being a situational pass rusher. They didn't really want to waste his snaps on a rundown. With Ajabo, they're happy to waste those snaps. He's just not particularly good at it. He's okay. He's probably above the replacement level as a run defender. That's what I'd say. He's probably above the replacement level. Sure. If you're gonna assign the snaps to various people, then you go ahead and you do that. We got to talk about one other activation that kind of affects those front five, of course, and that's Aeneas Peebles, who was activated as the fifth defensive lineman and played only four snaps. Any problem with that in a game like this?
I've had a lot of problems with the roster construction this year. I've had a lot of problems with the activations that they've had. I'm not sure I see the value in activating Peebles and giving him four snaps. It just doesn't seem logical to me. I'm almost at the point, and this might be a rash judgment, and perhaps I've had too much turkey, so forgive me for the listeners on here. But if Peebles is too small to play in their scheme, why did you draft him? Right? Like, I think that Peebles has always had the ability to play as that situational pass rusher where you bring him in on pass rushing downs. He's got some juice. He's got some spark to him. But this team has made it very clear that they do not want to play him. And I just don't understand why we're drafting short arm, very light in the pants, defensive tackles if they're just not going to play on this team. Again, I'm not saying that Peebles was a bad pick. I'm not saying Peebles is a bad player. But if you're not going to want to play him on the team to the point where you're gonna bring in a 30-plus-year-old Taven Bryan over him, and Bryan's had some decent flashes. He's definitely had a decent role. I just don't know why you would spend that pick on Peebles, because he seems like a square peg in a round hole. So I don't get the four snaps at all, and they seem very hesitant to use him.
Right. He was in every time he's in, by the way. He's used in the dime package. Okay. Yeah. So he had three snaps as I count them, and a fourth snap where he's in on a penalty. I think it was the DPI, the 17-yard DPI he was in there as a pass rush. He actually had a pressure on that play, by the way, that was wiped out. But that's not enough. And I'm sure the response from Orr or Harbaugh would be that he would have played more important snaps if we'd have gotten into the game script that we wanted. Namely, we'd have gotten ahead. We'd have used him a lot more to try and close out the game. And I think that's probably true. But you always run the risk of this kind of game when you have only four active defensive linemen. And guess what? This is the kind of game you have to be fearful of if you only have, I'll be generous and call it 4.5 defensive linemen available to yourself. Even four, obviously, you need to be incredibly concerned about getting in a a negative play or snap count situation where your guys are going to worn the hell out. And I think that's what happened to the Ravens in large part with a defensive lineman in this game. They just were not up to it in the second half. Jones played a lot of snaps. Travis played a lot of snaps. He played quite well. But, you know, Jenkins, who had played pretty well in the first half, probably wasn't as good in the second half. And I think Okoye really wore down too. And Okoye didn't play that many snaps. He played about under 20, I believe.
Yes.
It might have been 16 even. I have it right in front of me here in the game book. But what did you think about that?
Yeah, Okoye had 16 snaps. I agree with you. You know, it's funny, Ken. I discovered your podcast years ago when I was furious over the fact that the Ravens were only dressing four defensive linemen, you know, and I was just in disbelief by it. And it's like, this is so ridiculously risky. This is a position where you get warned, you are getting double teamed by men that are 315 pounds. You've got to rotate, right? You've got, doesn't matter how good you are, you've got to rotate. And Peebles doesn't fit in with what they're doing. It's almost like you would have been better off dressing someone like a Josh Tupou, who could come in and play 18 snaps, right? At least above replacement level, you know, run stopping, and help cycle out some of the John Jenkins and the Travis Joneses to give them a little bit more of a break. And so, yeah, I just the roster construction this year, I think, has been very bizarre on a lot of fronts. I have not been wild with the, you know, four running backs and a fullback on the active roster. I've not been wild about the three outside linebackers that they had active for a mm-hmm. game or two going back a couple weeks ago. I haven't been wild about the defensive line rotation. I get that there's some injury there, but injuries happen to every team. As we see, every team we're playing has injuries and are missing people. And I just think that, you know, there's definitely a bit of a roster construction hole on this team, or maybe not hole, but just I think maybe a little bit of mismanagement. I say that, you know, very delicately, because I think Ozzie and EDC have done a really good job going back, you know, since 1996 running the roster of this team. And I think the two of them have basically been doing it together for those, you know, with different weights maybe adjusted to each person. But I don't know, this year they I just have really not been happy with some of the things that they've been doing. And I just can't see the logic in four snaps of Peebles.
Right. I mean, I have trouble seeing it, obviously, too. And obviously the way the game worked out does have something to do with it. The loss and activation also, and I'm not saying I want to see 26 snaps of Ajabo instead in place of 26 snaps of Lawson. But if you look back at their activations, their desire not to activate Lawson previously, their desire was so great that they dressed three outside linebackers, including Ajabo, for what, two or three games in there?
Yeah,
maybe three. And that boggles the mind in terms of why they would now substitute Lawson for Ajabo. Obviously, you didn't have what you wanted before. What makes this situation different? Was Taven Bryan providing something maybe as a defensive lineman that they thought Lawson was replacing? Maybe, but. You know, I guess I could see a reason why they dress five and four defensive linemen before I'd see they did what they did with Peebles, four defensive linemen, and the four outside linebackers. So just obviously Lawson is, to me, he's an injury insurance policy. He's not mm-hmm. really a player you want to see in there. And we'll see how they treat that the rest of the time. They may have another guy they want to go to. They haven't gone to Malik Ham the whole year. So that's still a pretty, I don't know. Did he go on IR too? Did he just recently?
I didn't think so. I've been hoping for Malik Ham to get a shot this whole year. And I would say, gun to my head, you run Malik Ham out there for five games. You run Ajabo out there for five games. I'm not sure Ajabo is going to have a better run. I'm not saying Malik Ham's going to do better, but, for the cost, right? You could have cut Ajabo before the year and saved some money. Malik Ham is you know, essentially free. You know, he's a minimum contract player. Plus, you have Malik Ham for another year, right? This is his third year. He was injured the first 2 years. This is year three, right? You have him for year four. I thought there was a lot more value. And I've only seen Malik Ham play in preseason games. I'm not saying I'm the world's most foremost expert, but I just had to think that there may have been a little bit of value there that I'm not sure I completely get on the Ajabo front. Right. So anyway, moving on. So we have the injury to Wiggins, which happened right before the half ended. And so he went out. John Harbaugh said it's not serious. Now, I don't know what that means. I'm not
He said it's not serious in terms of being a long-term thing. Yes. He didn't know whether it was going to be this week or whenever.
Yep. Right. So that doesn't make me feel good. And what really scares me is going into Cincinnati with T. Higgins out of the concussion protocol. Jamar Chase, who was kicking our butt. I mean, he had a lot of targets and didn't have as many catches as targets, but it really scares me going into Cincinnati with a healthy Higgins and Chase and no Nate Wiggins. So it was very, very sad to see him come out. I do think Awuzie played pretty well. I think he's stepped up this year and has been a pretty decent corner. And so you hate to lose him. You hate to be without him for a while. Ken, a question for you. Do you know if DK Metcalf is injured?
Yeah, he was recently. So I think he was injured maybe in the last game against the Bears.
Because if he's injured, you know, maybe we could get by that Steelers game without having Wiggins. Of course, you want him there. Yeah. But if he's out, that
let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
It helps, but man, T Higgins and Jamar Chase, that's not going to be fun to do without Wiggins.
Wiggins has been one of the players that's really given a lot of flexibility to Orr's defense, and his flexibility comes in multiple forms. You can, first of all, you can work on an island on the side he's had. You can have him travel and chase somebody else. And you think about Hamilton taking away the strong side of the field. If you have Wiggins then on the other side, you know, usually covering an X receiver who's all by himself and is taking up a lot of that space budget, as I call it, then Wiggins is an extraordinarily valuable complement to who Hamilton is. And it's a huge loss for the Ravens. If it's whether it's one game or more, it's a very big loss, and they'll be able to manage with it. I guess Awuzie and Humphrey will be full-time outside corners. We'll have Hamilton in the slot, and we'll either have Martin at slot corner on dime packages, which they did for two straight weeks with tremendous success, or they'll move Tampa into the outside and have Humphrey move to slot corner in dime packages. And they played 19 snaps, I think it was. No, 21 snaps of dime this week. So it's not an insignificant portion of total snaps where they need somebody other than Hamilton at that slot corner position.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things I noticed, Ken, was while Keon Martin was back, he certainly didn't rack up the snaps. I think he only had one defensive snap.
Yep. And that was with Awuzie hurt briefly when Wiggins was also lost at the end of the first half. Mm-hmm. And he came in a dime package at that point. Yeah, but you're right. He didn't play. And that indicates that they, as of right now, probably prefer Tampa to Martin as a sixth defender. And, you know, in this game, I think it's fair to say that Tampa wasn't terrible. I know PFF didn't score him very highly. I think that's largely a function of the DPI, but he had a couple of really nice plays he was involved in close to the goal line on the left side of the field at the end of the first half. That one of them was a PD Or was ruled that way anyway. And the other one was an incomplete pass where he was in closest proximity. So I thought he played pretty well in terms of sticking with his receivers. Other than that, the DPI was not great.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, I think that regardless of if this season ends up in a Super Bowl, which I'm not sure how likely that is, we'll be hopeful. But, you know, I like having TJ Tampa get reps against different offenses, different quarterbacks, different receivers, different size and shape. I think there's no replacement for having film of yourself against a variety of offenses. And, you know, coming in and being able to play some in this game, I don't know. I think that's really helpful. I think the same thing on the Emory Jones front, right? If you can come in, did Emory Jones, was he Marshall Yanda out there? I don't know if anyone's Marshall Yanda day one. And I can tell you 99% of players aren't Marshall Yanda after their career, right? But what is very helpful is can I get a look against these defensive tackles and the team that does stunts this way and rotates their pressure that way, then I get more tape against a different team and a different team. I think there's a lot of value there. So I'm happy to see Tampa in there and, you know, learning what he can do, can't do, and how he becomes a better player, because we still have him for a few years.
Fail forward. I'm always for that, whether it's baseball, football, whatever. And in football, I think you bring up a really good point about wanting to see him versus a variety of schemes. But it did seem like Tampa maybe is a good player to go against Burrow. And there are two characteristics of Burrow that make him, A, dangerous, but also B, kind of limited in terms of what he can do. One is just does not have top arm strength. So he's not a guy that you maybe fear as much the deep ball in the same way. But you do need guys who can come up on underneath routes and make hits, because he has all of these damn ball out quicks that just go to usually mostly to the side. They get the ball outside of the frame of the set piece players, and they have a chance to break a play all the time with guys out there like Chase Brown and like Ja'Marr Chase and even Higgins, who's not the greatest wide receiver screen guy, is still a good blocker out there, so he can help you in that way. It's just it's a good weapon for the Bengals. They went to the tight end too. They went to, was it Sample or who was the one who caught the pass that looked like he was Humphrey misdiagnosed who the screen pass was to, and then he bolted back. I think it was 89, which would have been Cam Sample.
But this, yeah, Sample.
The screen went over his head to the right sideline, ended up being a 10-yard play or so maybe for Sample.
Yeah, it was interesting that the Bengals were using, I mean, they had Noah Fant had a catch, 86, Drew Samples, 89, Tanner Hudson, 87, he had a catch, and Mike Gesicki had two catches. So they each had two catches, and Gesicki had four. So just kind of interesting dispersion of targets, that they were going to. But I definitely thought Ja'Marr Chase and Chase Brown had their way with them. And those are the two guys you really need to look for going forward. So yeah, we'll have to see what they do with Wiggins out. If I had to guess, he probably misses a couple weeks, but not looking forward to that piece.
Yeah. I mean, that would be Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. That'd be terrible. All right, let's jump forward and talk about packages a little bit, because the Ravens went back to what they could do when they had Hamilton, and they pretty much stuck with it. And the major package that they used there was very effective. They had one snap of jumbo that was on second and two. They didn't run it on first and two, but then Cincinnati, I think, got heavier on second and two. They were able to make replacements. They got a stop for 0 yards and on a run, and then they pulled it off the field again immediately. They had two snaps of base. One of them was early. I think it was in the first. It was on first and two from the goal line package, and they stopped them for an incomplete pass on that play. And then they had it in one time later in the game on first down when they ran for 18 yards. So base defense was fine. The base is not the package the Ravens play very often anymore. Then they went to big nickel 53 times out of 80 snaps. That's almost two-thirds. And Hamilton was on the field for every single, well, he's on the field for every single snap, but he's on the field at slot corner for every single five defensive back snap. So if they played base, he'd be in a strong safety kind of position. If they played jumbo, he could be, you know, anywhere else that he's required in the kind of a goal line situation. And he played Will linebacker, most importantly, when they're in the dime package, which is the other thing they played a lot of in this game. But going back to the big nickel for a second, very effective there, 3.8 yards per play. And this is exactly the kind of team, look, and this is narrative building, by the way. This is exactly narrative building. I would actually have to look at these plays to know that this is the way this broke out. But if I'm narrative building, from what I know to be the overall statistics, I would say this. I can understand how that might have happened against a team like the Bengals because Hamilton is so effective taking away the strong side of the football field. I actually think that the Bengals try and use that a ball quick all the time, of course, but I think they actually tried to counter scheme on that, particularly in some of the early plays in this game when they had that seven pass, that run of seven straight offensive wins. In particular, I think the PL8 on the very first play of the game might have been counter to the position where Hamilton was in a method where they wanted to try and get out and make a play after the catch. It's easy to say, oh, that was just Hamilton, you know, on the strong side of the formation, dominating completely. And I'm sure he had a part in it because Hamilton had another very good game. But I don't want a narrative build either without actually looking at those individual snaps. But I'll start you off with the analysis and say, great big nickel in total. Have at it if you want to go look at why that might have occurred in the big nickel.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Like you said, it's easy to narrative build, but when you look at the data, it helps the narratives come around. Great to see that in the big nickel that they're playing well. I had a thought that I don't know if I have an opinion on, but I had a thought that I wanted to get your take on, Ken. So do you think it would behoove Kyle Hamilton to put on any weight in the offseason? So he plays close to the line of scrimmage and is super effective doing that. He seems to take some wear and tear, even just from tackling with his shoulder or his collarbone. For the past couple years, I remember seeing him kind of dangle an arm to the side, especially so this year. Do you think that – I think I remember him being listed at about 6'4", 225 or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. Do you think him putting on 10 pounds would allow him to be more effective or more durable, or do you think that would start to take away from some of the burst he has that helps him either, you know, tackle the running back in the backfield, bust out the screens? What's your thought on the weight for Kyle Hamilton?
I think both those things would probably be true, that he might be marginally more durable with 10 more pounds and also be likely slower with 10 more pounds. There's very few players. The rule of football, by the way, folks, is you play with as much weight as you can carry athletically. Mm-hmm. Okay, so mm-hmm. if you're an offensive lineman, they want you to carry absolutely as much as you can still move and play the position because the weight helps in terms of a lot of contact elements and wearing down your opponent. He's such an unusual player, and the guy that he reminds me of is a guy older Baltimore football fans will remember is Ted Hendricks, who was 6'7", and when he came into the league, he weighed 210 pounds. And the guy, I mean, that's ridiculous. He's never particularly muscular. And so he's 3 inches taller than Hamilton and 10 pounds lighter is the way mm-hmm. to think of it. Yeah, don't tell me everybody was lighter in the day. They were a little lighter. The 310-pound tackle he played in that day might have weighed 285. That's still Hendricks getting enormous advantages in terms of his ability to lever those players with – by using his height effectively and maintaining staying low. Calais Campbell is able to do it, but Calais mm-hmm. Campbell is huge. Otherwise, the only guys who can find a way to get leverage advantages like that over bigger men tend to be the most elite pass rushers. And they have mm-hmm. to do it with a combination generally of the length to get exactly where they want, usually under the pads of the opposing players. They can still get a bull rush even when outweighed by 75 pounds sometimes. And they can also be so slippery that the offensive tackle has to put themselves out of position. And we've seen Hamilton now these last few weeks has bulled tackles, has bulled mm-hmm. guards. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been ridiculous. And I mean, the guy he reminds me of is Ted Hendricks. Ted Hendricks had that kind of ability to use his length to an extraordinary degree. By the way, Ted Hendricks, 37-inch arms.
Wow.
37-inch arms, yes. I mean, 6'7", so you know his arms would be long, but that's still remarkable.
Yeah, huge. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. All right. So let's see. We talked about the big nickel package. Let's talk about just a couple more. Uncovered nickel. They played three snaps of that. That's Urban, an outside linebacker. That's worked well for the Ravens. It really works well against the run as an option there. And it's a good option towards against needing that extra outside linebacker. They used it even more in the games where they were did not have a fourth outside linebacker available to them. But it basically is a package where they put in one outside linebacker, three defensive linemen, and Urban is essentially playing an edge role in that. So anyway, three runs for 6 yards in this game doing that. They didn't play any rush nickels. They didn't have any situation where they, quote-unquote, kicked an outside linebacker inside and then had one defensive lineman and were trying to rush the passer that way. They did have plays where they played the dime with that, but they didn't do any with the nickel with that. And then the dime, they had the two different versions of the dime. They had the one I just mentioned, which is a three outside linebackers on the field. And they another with two inside linebackers that they use Stimson as kind of a roving pass rusher, as well as having two other normal edge guys and typically Travis Jones. But they did use Aeneas Peebles for three of these as well.
Yeah, interesting. Every time I try to find Trenton Simpson's snap count, I say, I'm going to look between 5 and 8. And I'm just going to start there. And sure enough, I look and there he is at 7. What's your thought on Trenton Simpson's usage in the package?
I don't have any problem with it. I think, you know, he's played pretty well this year. The Ravens have given him every opportunity to play more. Mm-hmm. The thing I will say is I don't think Buchanan is having the year everybody thinks he's having. I think he's basically... I thought he kind of disappeared in this game. That's the truth of the matter. I think he made some tackles, had a couple of defensive wins, but it wasn't a very exciting game for him in a lot of ways. I don't, in a game like this with so much short area coverage involved, I would think he'd be a guy who'd be constantly making a bunch of plays, and he wasn't really used in that manner. It wasn't there in that manner.
Especially he's not on the, for being on there for 61 plays.
Yeah.
Right? Oh,
yeah.
I mean, you didn't really see him make any plays. It was 61 plays.
Yeah, he had one pressure as I scored it, and he had 6 or 7 tackles, I think. But you know, everybody had a lot of tackles in a game like this where they run 80 snaps. So it's you got to discount it to a certain degree. And then you got to look at really, are those tackles defensive wins or not? So by the way, if you ever want to do this and you want to figure out how to do it, what's the easiest way? Go to the game book. That's an NFL GSIS media is the username and the password you want to use. So, or NFL get you the same stuff and go in and look at the game book and then do a control F when you get into that game book and look for T Buchanan. And there'll be like 17 times where his name comes up and you'll be able to go through, you click through each one and you'll see were those offensive wins or not by looking at what was a down and distance before the play and how many yards were gained on the play. Really simple technique. And take you know, just a couple of minutes. Or you could just, you know, organize all his tackles on a play. You might be able to do that on NFL Pro. I'm trying to think if they allow you to sort by who made the tackle. You can definitely sort by who's on the field, but I don't know if you can sort by who made the tackle. So I'd have to look at that again. But anyway, very simple to go through there. That's the way I do it. In any game where I'm trying to decide how many defensive wins did a player had, I just go boom, 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 boom. And it takes me, you know, less than a minute, probably 30 seconds for any given player.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's great. Okay, so that was Trenton Simpson there. The dime was significantly less effective than big nickel.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this is some of their reason that they couldn't get off the field on third down was Burrow was able to beat the dime package for some plays. So, yeah, I mean, it's frustrating. Obviously, they got into third down situations. In the second half, they made 5 out of 8. They had 2 more that they converted that were by penalty, so they really made 7 out of 10. And then they really kept the Ravens from getting the ball back in the second half more, and they also added in what, another 20 points, right? They scored two, I think so. Wait.
Yeah, I think so.
Yes, yeah, 12-7. It was 32-14 at the end, right? So,
yep.
Yeah, it's frustrating. The dime has been off and on. The dime was great last week. The only thing I'd say about it is it's always a low kind of a number of total snaps. So I wouldn't look at it and say, oh boy, that's I'm really worried about it from this week. I mean, first of all, it's only 7.6 yards per play. It's not like 13, but it's been over 10 earlier this year in terms of the yards per play allowed. Go back here for
because didn't the dime really get picked apart in the Buffalo game, in that fourth quarter of the Buffalo game?
Yeah, did they play a lot of dime that game? They may have.
Didn't they have Jair Alexander out there for a bit? Yeah. Maybe I'm misremembering.
They played 25 snaps of dime and gave up 10.2 yards per play. You got a good memory. So, and then the last few weeks, the dime has been, let's see, Cincinnati, we just talked about 7.6 yards per play. I think they were good against the Jets, though. Since the Jets, 3.4 yards per play on 16 dime snaps. That's when it's just too low a snap total for me to really get excited about it, although it's not bad. They played 18 snaps of dime in the game against Cleveland and allowed only 9 yards. So half a yard per snap. I'll take that. And the Minnesota game, I want to say they had a few good plays against us. They had 24 plays for 211, so 8.8 yards per play in the dime. They're fantastic at nickel against Minnesota. One more. We'll do Miami, and then we'll have to go on to other topics here. 19 snaps and 4.6 yards per play in the dime. So basically the dime has been very effective for the year. It has a lot of bumps and kind of results need some smoothing before you say, oh, the dime sucks or oh, the dime is great. After the Cleveland game, you just have to kind of let it play out a little bit.
Sure. All right, Ken, you want to take us into pass rush here?
Sure, absolutely. So the first thing I do every week, of course, is look at ample time and space, ball out quick and pressure. And you can see in front of you what the ample time, space, ball out, quick, and pressure division is like in this game. The number that stands out is that Burrow threw 40% of the plays ball out quick. And that's Burrow in a nutshell, as he tries to get the ball out quickly, never really wants to see pressure. He's kind of like late career Peyton Manning at age 27, 28, whatever he is. He really does not want anybody in his face. And no quarterback does, but pocket passers in particular are very reticent to accept that kind of situation when they pass. He threw for 99 yards in those plays, 5.2 yards per play. He's always been not terribly effective. A 6.0 is the expectation for a ball out quick opportunity. Some of that is that you get to scheme those up. And in other cases, it may be that you take it when you see an opportunity open early during a play, like a slant route or maybe a hot read that is generated off of a blitz, but you didn't call that play in the huddle to occur, and you may get a good play out of it that way. And I think the other quarterbacks in Burrow tend to do better on these kind of plays. It's always been one of the things I've looked at where the Ravens have done particularly well stopping the Bengals when they've got the ball quickly.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I thought that, you know, Burrow gets the ball out quickly. He didn't do maybe as well as expectation, but for it being his first game since, what was it, week two maybe? I don't know. I think I was impressed, you know, get the ball out and let your talented receiving core do the rest for you. And I think Chase Brown did a really good job on some of the quick passes, just making some hay and just moving those chains forward.
Yeah. Jamar Chase had a ton of targets. He had 110 yards on 14 targets. I mean, it's under 8 yards a target, but it's still good. I mean, there's no problem with that. It's 7.8 yards per target. He's really a possession receiver. He had the pressure to ATS relationship was not ideal for the Ravens, 13 pressures and 15 ATSs. You'd prefer to have more pressures than ATS, but based on some of the things that have happened recently to the Ravens, I don't even consider that bad. And the results with pressure were absolutely fantastic. 13 plays for 15 yards. So he was 31 yards below expectation for that group of 13 plays. For this ATS opportunities, he did quite well, 15 plays for 140 yards, which is about 12 yards above expectation. So it should be about 8.5 yards per play, and he got 9.3. So certainly, overall, he was 33 net yards beneath his expectation, but still quite good as things worked out for Burrow, largely because he didn't turn the ball over.
Yeah, Ken, what did you think about the quality of the Cincinnati offensive line? I think that over the past few years, the Cincinnati offensive line has taken some heat, maybe been blamed for some of the injuries that Burrow's had over the years. What did you see from the Cincy offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, it's still a troubled offensive line in a lot of ways. The Ravens used a bunch of scheme to try and confuse them, for sure. I think that one guy who, you know, he's had some problems. He has to cheat a little bit more than he used to as Orlando Brown, but he played well in this game. There's no doubt about it. They didn't get much pressure from that side. And when they did, it was usually Green stunting in some way. The left guard is a rookie, Dylan Fairchild. He played pretty well, I thought, in this game, but he had Travis Jones on some. He gave up some pressures. Mm-hmm. Dalton Risner had a false start. But I would say it does not look good when the opposing offensive line plays as well as they did in this game. But when I look at the pressure results, I don't think the Ravens did a terrible job getting 28% pressure is low, but I don't think the Ravens did a terrible job in terms of their pressure to ATS relationship in the game.
Yeah, makes sense. I would say my general thought was that the Cincy offensive line played a little bit better than I expected them to. I say that without any statistics or logic to back that up, but I was hoping we'd be able to find just a little bit ways to get more pressure and maybe force Burrow into a turnover or two. And, you know, ultimately there's some games where the secondary, like against the Bills, secondary dropped a couple interceptions, right? There was a pretty easy interception the other week that Nate Wiggins dropped. I didn't think there was many of those opportunities here. And while,
yeah, good point,
you know, Burrow could have done better, he didn't put the ball in harm's way. And, you know, when you look at it, one team basically gave the ball away. The Lamar Tuck rule, I'll exclude that one, but the other four were, you know, or at least three of the four were just complete giveaways of the ball. Mm-hmm. And Burrow didn't even come close to putting the ball in harm's way. So I wanted just to give a little credit to the Cincy O-line and also to Burrow for just protecting the football. I mean, that's how you win in the NFL.
I mean, his performance, even though he's below the expectation of yardage, it's way better than the expectation of yardage anytime you have zero turnovers. So let me just start with that. You'd really have to be a lot further below expectation for yardage to not have that be a good game with zero turnovers. Yeah. So yeah. All right. One thing the Ravens did do in good quantity in this game was go after Burrow with a lot of deception. They used a fair amount of off-ball blitzes. That wasn't their primary means, though. They had about 0.19 per play. That's actually a little bit low. Seven plays. They created three pressures off that, and they allowed only 4.7 yards per play when they tried a blitz. That included, of course, the Humphrey sack, which is off the corner there. So that counts as an off-ball blitzes by the definition that I use. And so they did fairly well with the blitzes, but they didn't do it all that often. What they did do much more was the stunts. They had 14 stunts in this game, including two doubles. So that's 12 plays in total, 6.7 yards per play. So the outcome is not something with that number that you can say, oh, well, that's great or that's terrible. It's just right in the middle. Mm-hmm. But they got three pressures on that. I think what I've been seeing recently is that there's been many fewer stunt calls, but when they've had them, they've been quite successful with them. This is a game where Orr seemed to basically look at the success they've had with the stunts, either in the last few games or versus Burrow in past years, and said, we need to do more of that. And I think he probably was calling it from the bench, but I wouldn't rule out the possibility that the players were allowed to call stunts on the field in this game, which is something if they've got two or three stunts in a game that you know that Orr didn't have the handcuffs off in that way, allowing them to call things on the field.
Yeah, that's a good point. Simulated pressures. So they had 10 simulated pressures and gave up 69 net yards.
Yeah, so they were crazy with simulated pressure in this game. And normally a simulated pressure is two guys dropping from the line of scrimmage from a mugged A-gap look. Mm-hmm. And it most often is going to be at least one of those linebackers and one other player, but often the two linebackers dropping from the middle, and oftentimes on a dime package, that'd be Hamilton and Smith both dropping. They had two, three, and four. Let me just tell you this. The times they did it, they rushed three with four dropping, four and two, that's very normal, four and three, which is on the high end, a three and four, again, on another drive-ending play, a 5-3 on another drive ending play, a 4-2. Let's go a little further here. A 5-3. That was a drive ending play, but it was a touchdown, unfortunately. And another 4-2. So they had some mixed success with it. They did give up the big play they allowed in the in those 10 plays, which was 29 of the yards, was the long touchdown pass to Yosefus, basically right between the hashes or close to it. Mm-hmm. Not a good play for Starks, by the way, on that play, not to be there sooner. He had two options to cover there. And one of them, he had a cornerback who had the primary coverage. And the other one, he had Roquan Smith, who's panting for his life, trying to keep up with Yosefus. And it did not seem like he made the right call from a relative personnel standpoint there.
Yeah, and it seemed like Roquan took the heat on the broadcast for it. But, you know, Yosefus is a is an extremely fast receiver with Roquan trying to drop back to him. Definitely seems like Starks got over there a little bit late. So, yeah, I agree with you. I didn't think it was as much of Roquan's fault as maybe they let on there. Seems like Starks really should have gotten over.
Okay, real quick, Travis Jones and Mike Green led the team in pressures. Each of them had four of some sort. Each had a late quarterback hit in this game. We had Van Noy had three, if you include a quarterback hit that occurred that was negated by penalty. So not a great day for the pass rush overall. Not an absolutely horrible day, but Travis Jones and Mike Green both showed a little bit of juice as pass rushers, and that's nice to see.
Yeah, I agree. I think that in order to win the games against some of the tougher teams, I think you're going to need more than the effort that they got here. Again, like you said, wasn't fall off the table, wasn't disastrous, but I just don't think that that's quite enough to beat the good teams. And we've got a lot of good teams on the schedule over the next few weeks. So, yeah. You know, can the pressure generators, can they take it up just another notch? You know what I mean? That's really what it comes down to, because again, we didn't force Burrow to make any mistakes. We didn't really force any mistakes. You know, you take out the late Travis Jones forced fumble, but that was almost too late. I know it could have had some impact, right? But mm-hmm. it was almost too late. You've got to force a mistake here or there, especially if your offense is having a hard time holding onto the ball. So I don't know if they're able to do it. But I think that if they're going to be able to make some hay this year, and by that I mean even get into the playoffs and be competitive there, I think they just need, against the Cincinnati offensive line, I think that the pressure generated has to be a little bit better than what we got yesterday.
Yeah, they'll get another chance, and hopefully they'll have brought something from this game to do it.
Yeah.
Matt, always great talking football with you. You've done all kinds of shows with me over the last year. I've appreciated it tremendously, including stepping in for Voss on Friday Morning GM for a good portion of the year, and doing some of the other expectation series and other series we've done with shorts and whatnot, some acquisitions, I think. But it's always great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can catch up to you online.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at 20KidRock.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. As always, happy Thanksgiving, and really hope you'll take the time to use hashtag film study mailbag. I'm looking for submissions of multiple types here. First of all, love to have questions for the show. We'll get to some of those in part two. Offense, defense, and Friday Morning GM are the three primary categories. But if you have a question about matchups or a question for the Know Your Foe guy, that's fine too. The other thing is I'm looking for mailbag questions that you'd like me to make into a video short. And if that's the case, just use hashtag film study mailbag as normally. And I'll try to figure out if I think it would make a good explanation item. That's what I'm kind of looking for, is a 2-minute item that I can explain in a video short that will hopefully generate some new traffic for the podcast content. So thanks very much for your loyal listenership. It's greatly appreciated. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.